Welcome to the show. This is a special expanded edition of Beneath the Surface. It's going to be first hour. We're going to be doing a more or less normal show, but focused up still around what's going on in the world and in relation to these elections that are going on today. And that was Charles Mingus you've been listening to. Charles Mingus talking about doing a song called Don't Let It Happen Here. Please, please don't let it happen here. In this hour, our first guest, here's the way it's going to run this first hour. Towards the end of the show, we'll be talking with Joanne Mariner about the presidential candidates and torture, talking about their views on torture. Before that, we'll be talking with Michael Rapkin from the ACLU Foundation and a lawyer for one of the detainees at Guantanamo, talking about the conditions in Guantanamo, torture in Guantanamo. And opening up the hour, we will be talking with Ray McGovern. And listeners to KPFK are familiar with Ray. He's been on the station many times. He's actually a man of tremendous integrity, knowledge, and heart. And I've really always felt good watching Ray walk through the world and tell the truth and fighting for basically for what's right. Before we join Ray on the phone, I want to say a couple of things. People might be listening to the Schwarzenegger speech these days. It's happening. It's been happening. I think it might still be going on. And just keep your eyes on that because, you know, it's really incredible what's happening with this. He's declaring a fiscal state of emergency. And what's happening is he's just going to be railroading all of these people, making all kinds of cuts and hitting the people who need assistance, need aid the most are being just gut. Everything that goes for them is just being gutted. So keep your eyes on that. The budget will come out on Thursday. The speech today was just to let everybody know he's declaring a fiscal state of emergency and to give some little rap to set the tone for that. So keep your eyes on that and then set your outrage out after that. That's just an incredible, incredible mess that he's opening up. So let's jump into it with Ray McGovern right now. Ray, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. Glad to be back.
Sure. I read recently a piece you had in Counterpunch, and I think it was printed somewhere else before that, but I read it in Counterpunch, and it was a thing called creeping fascism. And as I read it, I kept thinking, you know, that in conjunction with, I don't know if you saw the New York Times editorial back on New Year's Eve, on December 31st,
mm-hmm.
An incredible piece that just, for people who didn't see it, it was a piece that laid out just the horrendous things that are going on in this country right now, inside the country and around the world, and pretty much laid out a very dismal and enraging and frightening to some picture of what's going on, but also, you know, sort of stopped short of saying, we really need to take care of this. But you started to speak to that. And I'd like people to, you know, first off, why did you call your piece Creeping Fascism?
Well, I thought it was high time that people started calling a spade here. And with the Democratic opposition, so-called, of invertebrates, and I mean no insult to invertebrates, we just really have to speak out as a people here. The people need to exercise the power. And when I just reflect on what has happened over the last year and a half, where, you know, not only I, but every American can be arrested by some authority that's really unaccountable to us, held indefinitely without charges, tortured until I confess to whatever they want me to confess to, no habeas corpus. I just can't believe that the American people aren't out in the streets as our English forebears were, just protesting and making sure that we wrest our rights back from the king. And this president is a self-styled king. There were a bunch of things that needed to be wrapped up, the recent events. And I spent 5 years in Germany back in the 60s and 70s. And I've taken an inordinate interest in what happened during the early days of the Nazi regime. And, of course, I had all manner of opportunity to ask Germans, young and old, how could it be? How could it possibly be that you, among the most highly educated and cultured people in the Western world, how could you sit there and let Hitler do the things that he did, all sort of quasi-legally, and not find your voice? How could your institutional churches, the Catholic, your evangelical Lutheran church. How could they remain silent? How could they not find their voice as they watch this steady erosion of their rights and some of the terrible things that began to happen? And I never got a satisfactory answer to that. And the parallels to what I'm watching together now here in the United States are so shockingly similar that I drew from this wonderful memoir by Sebastian Hafner, who was there when all this happened. And he's not writing a historical novel or history. He's writing a everyday kind of notes of what's going on. And as the Nazis took over after the Reichstag, the burning of the German parliament in late February of 1933. And the way he relates this is shockingly reminiscent of what's happening now here in this country. Unless the people wake up, unless we decide to empower the rather weak-kneed politicians that we have now in Congress and insist that they do their job in protecting our rights, it'll all be over. And in many senses, if we don't do that, it is all over, because the legislation on the book, just like the emergency acts in Nazi Germany, empower the president to act like a king. And people just need to say that. And when you mentioned the New York Times editorial, I read that with amazement, because it's an incredible list of high crimes and misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at the end, it sort of whips out by saying, well, I guess... Guess we can hope for something better in November or next year, maybe.
Right.
Well, you know, that's totally oblivious to the fact that Cheney and Bush can wreak all kinds of havoc over the next year, not only in Iraq, perhaps in Iran, Afghanistan, and here with our own civil liberties. Our founding fathers were incredibly prescient. You know, they thought this thing through. They not only prepared the most artful document to govern a folk than anyone in the world, but before they left Philadelphia, those hot summers there, they put into that document, the Constitution, an orderly process to take care of the situation that we face now. See, they were masters of human nature. They knew that even though they carefully divided the powers and separated them, that inevitably, human nature being what it is, inevitably somewhere down the line, and they probably thought it would take place more than 200 years later, some president would start acting like a king. And, you know, they didn't want another revolution when that happened. One revolution is quite enough, thank you very much. And they didn't want a, you know, military junta taking over like in Latin America. They wanted to create for us an orderly process, a political process where our representatives in the House would initiate an investigation. And they made it easy to impeach someone for high crimes and misdemeanors, a simple majority. And they made it difficult to get rid of them because the Senate would have to vote by 2/3. So why don't we do it? Well, that's another story.
Let me ask you this, because I might, you know, we have a different view of the Constitution, but I do understand what you're saying in terms of people, you know, the whole point of and of the founding fathers. In fact, I think that at their time they actually played a good role overall in relation to, you know, going against the British and the feudalism and establishing this republic. At the same time, you know, they were slave owners, they were this, they were that. You know, they had the Constitution actually didn't even recognize women or black people as human, you know, mm-hmm. as fully as human, or give or accord them any rights. But the thing is that, be that as it may, I mean, that's something you and I could talk about at another time on another show, but this is something in terms of the Constitution that does exist. And what's happening right now, this frontal assault on the very foundations of what people have, the civil liberties that people have had. And you've actually delved into this, and you have a lot of experience having worked, you know, in the government and in the various, the, you know, what a lot of people would look at as the top police agency in terms of the CIA, you know, and you were an analyst there, but it's still, you have an understanding of the way these things work. And some of the things that they've gone on, like, I'd like to ask you about two things in particular. One is, well, let's first off talk about the destruction of the torture tapes, because that, to me, I mean, That there's so much concentrated in that. And in terms of, if you want to talk about impeachable offenses, there are at least six criminal offenses in just the act of, they're, you know, when the 9/11 Commission said that they, well, this also obstructed our ability to investigate this. And they said, you know, they said, we find it, that, and Jonathan Turley actually wrote a column where he said there's at least six criminal offenses included in the 9/11 Commission's report on how they were obstructed. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, and not to mention the assault on humanity that this represented, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's just it, you know. Amused is the wrong word, but it's almost a case of being amused that what it's taken to put people in high dudgeon is the fact that there's been clear obstruction of justice here. And my educated guess is that started right at the top in the White House by White House counsel. And, of course, we do have reports that White House counsel, Vice President's counsel, and others did conspire to get those tapes destroyed. But as you were suggesting, Michael, you know, this is a cover-up. I mean, we knew from early 2004 that the torture was happening. We had the photos from Abu Ghraib. We had Richard Clark's book in which he said that the president told him and Rumsfeld in the White House basement right after his speech to the nation on that day, on 9/11, I don't care what the international lawyers say, we're going to kick some ass. And we have the documents because people gave them to Newsweek. We have the Gonzales memo that said Geneva is quaint and obsolete. And we have the president's approval of that memo on February 7, 2002, where he said, we shall treat prisoners, quote, humanely, comma, as appropriate, comma, and as consistent with military necessity, period, end quote. That's not what Geneva says. That's not what the War Crimes Act of 1996 says. So we had it all out there, and these people now are sort of sucking their thumbs and say, oh, my goodness, now they destroyed the evidence. What have they done since 2004 when we first knew about all this stuff? Nothing. So we really have to build a fire under these folks now and put an end to this.
Well, think about this, too. Actually, first off, let me remind listeners that I'm Michael Slayton. This is KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. And I'm talking now with Ray McGovern, a former CIA analyst, a writer, an activist, a man with a lot of heart and a lot of desire to stand up and fight for against crimes against humanity. And, Ray, let me ask you this, because, you know, part of this, we look at this, you know, and I keep thinking, just, as it rolls along, it just keeps getting worse. Mukasey comes up, and here's a man who can't even admit, can't even say, and it's not, he's not stupid. I mean, it's like, it's almost a slap in the head to humanity as a whole by saying, well, I can't necessarily define this as waterboarding, as torture. You know, this is, it's an incredible, you know, go ahead and speak to that.
Well, it's very clear why he couldn't do that, because then he would be putting the President of the United mm-hmm. States and all those who followed his orders in legal jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
Waterboarding is freely admitted to by so many people that it's a, sort of a yawn. And the president did authorize it, and we have memos from Rumsfeld and others that show that this was done. So for Mukasey to say, well, yeah, I think it's torture, well, that just was beyond the pale. He couldn't do that because he didn't want to endanger the fellow that gave him the job. So it's very, very crass, and it's very, very un-American. I do have enough faith in the American people that they'll start to wake up now, particularly in this political season. I take great encouragement from what happened in Iowa, and I'm sure what's going to happen tonight in New Hampshire. And I just ask everyone to get out there, get off their rear ends, because as Martin Luther King, whom we honor this month, once said, sometimes you have to put your body in it. And that's what I think it's going to take before Congress takes notice.
You know, it's interesting. Actually, I am going to have you back sometime for a whole show where we can discuss all these things, because, you know, I don't take much heart in terms of the electoral process. And I want to get into that in a little bit, because you end your article in something that really, to me, sort of sets things out in terms of the need for people to actually step out beyond the bounds of what's acceptable. You know, there's a problem here. If we confine ourselves to the limits and the parameters that we've always had, like you said in the beginning of this, if, you know, people are just, you know, they just allow it to go on, and people have not out in the streets. Well, there's a certain confinement of views of what's acceptable or what's the way that you can actually change things. And they assume that things can go, they'll just stay the same, that, that the form of government or whatever, and not that this isn't repressive enough, you know, but that there's actually, that the form of government is simply, it sits on top of something and it can change dramatically, as you start out with talking about the Nazis and the rise of Hitler. And you end up with, you don't have to be a Nazi, you can be a sheep.
Well, that's what was experienced in Nazi Germany in 1933, that crucial year when people did turn into sheep. And the parallels, again, are striking. You know, they had the burning of the German parliament. We had 9/11. And Hitler used the burning of the German parliament to impose what he called emergency decrees. And we had our Patriot Acts, so-called. And so the German people... as Hafner describes in his book, took it as a matter of course that since terrorists, interesting, isn't it? They were called terror. They were communists, but they were called terrorists by Hitler. Terrorists had burned down the German parliament. Therefore, it followed as night the day that your mail should be opened, that your telephone calls should be tapped, and that your desks could be broken into while you were away. And nobody said diddly, and that's what's happened in this country. And so that's what we have to start saying, is this is unacceptable. And I think that if we surge, pardon the expression, and you know, really take this seriously as a, as an endangerment for what we hope for our children and grandchildren, that we can turn this thing around. And I think this is here to do it.
You know, part of the thing, too, though, is I think, and this is the thing that, that gets me, too, is that when you look at, you know, the, and I understand that someone was telling me earlier that, you know, that there's been a, just an incredible outpouring of voters in New Hampshire, and a lot of people, independents, moving over to the Democrat, voting Democrat, and you know, they're running out of, they're running out of Democratic ballots, and you know, all of this. And at the same time, you know, and I think that when you think about it, I think that that expresses a real desire on the part of the people for change. But at the same time, there's also, you know, there's sort of a, it's almost like that movie Groundhog, you know, where every day you wake up and the same thing is happening, you know, you're living it over and over and over again. And you keep thinking, I keep thinking, you know, how long are we going to go for the Charlie Brown and Lucy thing? How long are we going to run at the football and think, this time she's going to hold it there. She's not going to pick it up. Because there's a whole point that goes on, even with there's the paralysis of the Democrats, not just that they don't have spine, but there's a real political paralysis. They can't unleash what's their traditional base because things could get really out of hand there. And at the same time, their interests, I mean, I don't, you know, none of these Democrats have been up there anywhere. I mean, like you've mentioned, around the spying, all of them, the top Democrats were all, well, we had to agree, we had to keep quiet, nobody is out there saying, look, these people, they need a special prosecutor, they need to be impeached, this torture is outrageous and unacceptable. There aren't those kinds of things going on, and I think that reflects, you know, a lot, and also, frankly, they're all calling for keeping everything open, all options open, including nuclear weapons, apparently, in relation to Iran. You know, this is to me, it's a very dangerous thing if we're looking at putting all of our eggs in the baskets carried by the Democrats.
Well, you're right. But the immediate problem would be to prevent a nuclear attack or even just a conventional attack, just, I say, on Iran, because that would unleash bedlam. And that's one real good argument for impeachment, Michael, because what Admiral Fallon out there in CENTCOM and what the JCS, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, need is something to hang their hat on if Cheney and the President decide, despite everything, if they decide to order or to allow the Israelis to order an attack on Iran. If that happens, these fellows need to have an impeachment process underway so that they can say, well, wait a second, you know, what is this all about? Iran certainly isn't any threat to the United States. Could this be about... Well, President's being, or the vice president being impeached, could we be being asked to start a third world war to save the political behind of a draft deserter during Vietnam and a five-time draft deferred fellow during Vietnam? Is that what we're being asked to do? No, I put my name on the top of the retirement list, Mr. President, and by the way, I'm going down to AP right now and tell them what you've just ordered me to do in hopes that my successor will act like Ruckelshaus during Watergate and also refuse to carry out your illegal orders. That is possible, but it won't happen unless something else is going on, and that would be impeachment.
And I'd put out that it also would, none of that is going to happen without the kind of, you know, people in the streets with pitchforks and torches, the way that, you know, that you were talking about in the beginning. There needs to be, people can't, I mean, when we're talking about even with Mukasey and all, and John Yoo, you know, when you look at what that, what this animal said about, you know, the fact when he could actually say it would be okay for an interrogator to crush a small boy's testicles in front of his father, in front of a suspect, his parents, his mother or father, you know, in order to get the kind of information we have, these kinds of things. If this and a general assault and the danger of any kind of attack on Iran or any kind of attack anywhere else in the world that's going on, these kinds of things, people need to get out in the streets and get beyond. They need to, you know, as Sansara Taylor used to talk about, that they need to come down out of the basketball stands, out of the stands, and onto the court and start playing the game by different rules. You know?
There's an opportunity to do that this Friday. We here in Washington and other key cities are having the celebration to mark the 6th anniversary of the taking of prisoners into Guantanamo.
Oh,
when I say celebration, I mean demonstration. Many of us will be wearing those orange jumpsuits, and many of us will not have any personal ID other than the name of one of the Guantanamo prisoners. And if we're arrested and if we go to court, we're going to get those names into the official ledger of the federal court. We tried that last year. They got onto us and they threw us out.
Yeah.
This year, I think we're going to make that stick.
That is really good. That's really good news, Ray. I'm really pleased to hear that. And I think people, I know they're having things here in L.A. too. And I'll be putting out the information around that. And it's anywhere in the country. We have a lot of listeners on the internet. People should follow suit. Look it up. Go to worldcan'twait.org. Other, you know, look up for where actions are happening. Wear orange. This is the kind of thing. This is the kind of outpouring we need, and so that we don't follow suit. We don't follow the example of what happened in Germany. And as Ray put it, you know, you don't have to be a Nazi, and you don't have to be a sheep either. You know, you can't be a sheep. Humanity is depending on you.
Amen.
All right, Ray. Thank you very much, man.
Thank you, Michael.
And we'll have you back soon. We'll have to get in all those other discussions.
Sounds great.
All right. Take care, man. Bye now. I'm Michael Slate, and that was Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, talking about the creeping fascism and the need to stand up against it. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will be talking with Michael Rapkin from the ACLU Foundation and an attorney for one of the detainees at Guantanamo.
You're listening to Commercial Free.